about most things. And a friend of mine who's known nationally on radio and TV has a big following, is almost ready for it to go to press. Thomas Nelson's son is going to publish a book and try and get it out, would you believe, 6 weeks at least before the election, about the deceitfulness of our U.S. government. Now, it's not a party politics thing, but it gets worse every administration. We're lied to, deceived, conned, and so forth. And here's what he told me when he started it, and I gave him enough ammunition to put three books together. And he said, I'm only going to put in my book what I could take into court as evidence, documented. That's going to be a little dynamite bomb.
Mm-hmm.
That should be released not later than about mid-September.
I think a friend of mine here has a question for you.
Sure.
Mr. Hemmerman, what did the last total troop count of foreign and otherwise on U.S. or Mexican soil?
Well, the best word I get through a U.S. senator who's, because of his election and or other fears, does not want his name mentioned, but he and two congressmen, U.S. congressmen, and U.S. senator, have appointed themselves a committee to write herd on it, and they say between Canada, Mexico, and the United States, there's over 3 million.
Okay.
They'd asked me what I thought, and I said 80,000, best figures I had, and that was here in the 48 states. And they said, well, in North America, it's many times that, and we're keeping official count on it as best we can with all the cover-ups that go on.
How can they keep count on it, do you know?
Well, they have connections around through other congressmen and that sort of thing. I had a man come to me out in Midland, Odessa, Texas. That's been about 3 weeks ago, and he had gone. He's a green card carrying legal Mexican here in the United States, and he had gone home, and he lived almost in Guatemala. So he had traversed by car from north to south and back again, all in about 10 days. And he drove 200 miles when he heard I was going to speak to talk to me. And he said, there's so many, and to him they were all Russians. Now, whether or not they're all Russians or former CIS or from Hungary or elsewhere, but they were foreign troops in uniform with military equipment. So many that he said he would not even try to guess how many. And he said, if you're wondering why Mexicans are flocking in to Southern California, it's because that whoever's supplying these foreign troops is buying a bowl of food, and the Mexicans are starving. That's a pretty serious thing.
Yeah.
Here's another question you had, Bob.
What's happening overseas in Bosnia, and what do you think your plan might be as far as shipping our loyal U.S. troops offshore? And
well, we've just sent another 5,000 over there, plus we're sending a few thousand more over to Saudi Arabia. Plus, we have added numbers, and many of them are Marine infantry units afloat out in the Mediterranean. So the total number of people we have there, not counting the normal troops that are in Europe, you know, we used to have about 290,000 army alone in Europe, and that's been cut down to under half. But those sent around Bosnia and Macedonia, nobody ever hears about Macedonia. Because our news has agreed to lie to us, deceive us, keep us in the dark. We have a third of an American division that left Würzburg, Germany, 11 months ago, under the command of a general from Finland with a United Nations uniform on, directly in command of those several thousand American troops. And they're in Macedonia, which is a part of the former Yugoslavia, the same as Bosnia. But they kept it out of the news because the United Nations and our leaders that have sold out the United Nations don't want Americans to know, the population here, the voters, the taxpayers, the patriots, to know who's commanding their sons and daughters down there. And it's as unconstitutional as it can be.
Any further word on the activity in the Army Reserve and FEMA?
All of that has been accomplished. It is required to be accomplished by the 30th of September, the end of this fiscal year. The federal government works on a fiscal year that goes from 1 October to 30 September. Most of that is accomplished by January of this year, not next month. And it's gone off pretty smooth, and the transition's pretty well taken care of. They have in the Training and Doctrine Command at Fort Monroe, Virginia, right there at Norfolk, they have a document out, and I'm trying to get a hold of it. I only have the cover document to it on how you contain civilian detainees and use them as a workforce on military installations. So this thing's getting closer by the day.
Any more on the stocking of food in the FEMA centers?
No, I've not heard any more on that. I do know that that some of the meals ready to eat, MREs, that were in Desert Storm are being destroyed just in case they've been contaminated. And the Air Force is selling their MREs through the Civil Air Patrol and at a giveaway price. And it might be well for some of our Americans to try and stock up on some of that long shelf life food. I have an 18-wheeler load of it outside right now, being unloaded.
Wow.
At 19 cents a meal.
Wow, cheap.
Usually it's almost $4 a meal.
And this is done through the Civil Air Patrol?
Yeah, you can only get through the Civil Air Patrol from the Air Force. But the Army is destroying all of theirs, the surplus.
That's weird.
Well, it really is.
Yeah.
And we know, and of course FEMA knows, that there's going to be a food shortage and they're going to need food. And why they don't take that to feed our people they incarcerate, I don't know. There's some very interesting, unanswered questions. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, there's a rally on the Mall in Washington.
Yes.
Begins Saturday noon and goes through Sunday night, don't you?
Yes. Are you going to be there?
Yeah, I'm going to be there. I'm supposed to speak Sunday morning. Are you going to be there?
No, I regret that I'm not going to be there. Just about everybody else is, though.
Well, yes, and I think there may be some subversives mixed in with it, but then also, you know, the CIA and FBI will have spies there.
Of course.
Okay.
Well, I appreciate the time, Jim.
Okay. Well, that brings you up to date a little bit. Well, who knows what else is going on that we'll find out maybe after it's too late.
Are you still getting our paper?
Oh, yes.
Okay, good.
Take that.
Okay, well, take care of yourself.
Okay.
And stay safe.
All right. God bless.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Is Bob still here?
No.
Bob knows the people in charge of that civil aeronautics situation.
Thanks.
Check it, see if it's recording. That'd
be okay. That'd be okay, I think.
Just check it, just make sure.
Okay.
We sure did get home.
The other way. Take those down. Yeah.
Just rewind a little ways.
Food. I have an 18-wheeler load of it outside right now.
Lovely.
Okay. We just have to rewind.
Thanks very much. Okay. My arm.
Winding.
Okay.
Rick, you're not doing your job.
What's that? That's why.
Well, now that you're a lawyer, do you have to...
that's what you do when you're a lawyer. You said what? What job?
What job is that?
Several people say they had a question to ask him, so...
Oh, okay. Fire away.
Whenever Rick...
Where's he going with that thing now?
He's a little nervous about the hot seat.
Yeah.
He was in it earlier.
He's a little nervous in the hot seat. Rick, I don't know if this is relevant or not, but, you know, Eric has been selling helicopter landing lights. Saturday, he went over to Santa Barbara because they were going to put a bunch of government helicopters were going to land there, and he was going to demonstrate, and so he went over, and then it was canceled, and so he came home because I couldn't even do that. The Santa Barbara meeting just barely missed.
Tape land didn't hear anything of that, so somebody's got to repeat some of it.
Sorry about that. Eric is selling helicopter landing lights. And Saturday, he went over to Santa Barbara for a nighttime demonstration of the lights to the airport because a bunch of government helicopters were going to be landing there.
And then it got canceled on Saturday, and so he had to come home without showing off his lights.
I might add to that, I got a newspaper clipping from a friend in Oregon. They've been having national air shows with just helicopters. And they were having one in Salem, she was sending me the notice. But people were flying in from all over for the helicopter air show. It was last week, I think.
David, I guess you were just at the Global Science about a week ago, and I was just watching last night your videotape on your recent talk in, where was that, Wales? Or
Wales, yeah.
Have you noticed any difference between the American audiences and the British audiences?
Yeah. American audiences seem to be a bit quicker on the uptake, to be honest. There's a few things I've noticed since I've been in America which relate to Britain, but America's far more up front, so you notice them more, I think. And there seems to me to be two psyches in America, which, and it's the same in Britain, but I just notice it more here. There is the individual psyche, which I'm going to sound like an American in London now, saying, "Oh, your country is so quaint, small but quaint." Because I mean, the American people I've met in the last 2.5 weeks have been fantastic. They're so friendly, so outgoing, you know, wonderful people. But there is a nation psyche, which, if you get pulled into it, can be extremely destructive in terms of control. And watching the party conventions here, it doesn't matter who you talk to or who you hear listen, because I've been stuck in motel rooms with C-SPAN watching it live. So it's been good. Well, good might not be a bit too far, but it's been interesting. And it doesn't matter who you listen to, whether it's Bob Dole or Colin Powell. Is it Colin Powell or Colin?
Colin.
Yeah, Colin Powell.
Appropriately.
Yeah. Somebody said the other day they call him Colin Powell because he's so full of shit. Yeah, right. But Ross Perot and a number of others that I've heard, and three things keep coming up again and again and again. Family values, the American dream, and this is the greatest country in the world. And you put it together, you've got a John Wayne film. And it's that it's that mentality that is appealed to whenever they want to go to a war in the Gulf, or they want to go into Vietnam, or they want to go anywhere. And it's the same in Britain, the Falklands War. Basically, the British version of the John Wayne mentality was activated there. And I think it's important to keep out of the nation psyche, if you like that American dream psyche, the greatest country in the world psyche, because I don't think there are any greatest countries in the world. I think there are people on bits of land. And once you can kind of get locked into there, you can start to get ever so excited and the flag starts waving and you've been hooked in. And then the collective mind is under control. So off we go into the Gulf. I mean, one of the most sickening things that I think I've seen in recent times was Colin Powell, addressing the veterans about a week ago, when he was talking about how wonderful it was after the Gulf War, all the parades, victory parades, and how America got its confidence back. Well, it's a great way of getting your confidence back when two people who knew each other for a long time and took oil kickbacks from each other, Saddam Hussein and George Bush, go to war and blow the crap out of effectively people who are victims of two people at war, which just happened to be stopped before the man that's supposed to be the monster could have been removed. So, great news. So I feel this whole, and we got it in Britain after the Falklands War. You know, the Archbishop of Canterbury in Westminster Cathedral just happened to hint that maybe war's not a great idea. And he was attacked from all sides, particularly by Margaret Thatcher, for being unpatriotic, you know. And so this psyche is appealed to all the time, and you get it on lower levels. You get it with the Croats and the Serbs. You get it with the the two sides in Rwanda. You get this like collective psyche. People lock into it. Bang, one's played off against the other, and away you go. So for me, the American dream is freedom. Funny enough, I was watching some of these Christian channels. It's kind of interesting. We don't have them in Britain yet.
Is it the one with the big hair?
Yeah, well, there was one called the Global Catholic Network. It's a series of dog collars talking at you.
Yeah.
And then they had this other one, which this guy looked like a pair of teeth with a jacket on, and he was patronizing the audience like crazy. About family values. I thought, crikey, you could have been at the Republican convention here. And then about Christian values. And then they cut out of that to an advert which went on for about half an hour for these two guys who were putting on a business, how to make lots of dough seminar. And they kept wheeling on these people who'd made lots of dough, who insisted on telling everybody they were Christians. And one couple were eulogizing about how good these people were, because after going to one of these seminars, they'd managed to buy a house and sell it on the same day with, I think it was about $20,000 profit. So I thought, these are the Christian values. This is the American dream. Increasing the price of a basic human right, which is a shelter, by $20,000 just to make a few quid. And I think this whole American dream thing is manipulated like crazy, because the dream is freedom, surely, and the American dream is actually the American dream world when you you see that it's being manipulated to actually stop the very thing it's supposed to be about, which is freedom.
When we talk about freedom, are you talking about spiritual freedom or freedom from all law?
Well, I think I think the physical world is a second by second reflection of human thought. So the more human minds have closed down, and the more we've handed over control of our lives to the very few, the more that has reflected itself in a deluge of law. You know, I mean, can you breathe in here without showing a pass? I mean, you know. I mean, I don't think the fascist state is going to come to America. I think it's actually arrived in many areas. And it's fast coming to Britain also, although it's a bit more subtle in Britain, because they've had thousands of years to, or certainly many, many centuries, to hone down their manipulation techniques. And it's brilliantly done there. Not so overt, but still just as imposing. So I think that instead of, it's like we say in Britain, I want you to say it here, putting the tail before the horse. The structure within which society works, under the true definition of freedom, will emerge when consciousness has switched. Then everything will fall into place. I think symbolically, for instance, we're moving from the pyramid to the circle, in terms of contributions and the way we see each other. And that's a very, very different way of coexisting. For instance, the pyramid, one of the other things it does is it decides the definition of success and failure. So one definition of success and failure is someone who keeps the streets clean in New York and stops disease and rubbish piling up all over New York. They're considered a failure, because they're a garbage collector. Oh my God, I don't know. And someone who goes and plays the casino in Wall Street or the casino in the City of London, and with a few decisions before lunch can blight the lives of vast tracts of their fellow humanity across what we call the third world, he's considered a success. Because success and failure is basically symbolized by the amounts of non-existent money you've got in a bank account, and the amount of non-existent money you make every day. So the more you have of that non-existent money, the higher you are in the pyramid. Beam me up, Scotty. It's bloody mad down here. So I think what the circle does, and as our consciousness switches to freedom for all, it naturally comes out of the pyramid, which is freedom for the few to dominate the rest, into the circle, which is respect for everyone's contribution. So under that attitude to life, the guy who or the woman who cleans the streets is seen in a very positive light because they're doing an essential job. I remember when I was at school, a friend of mine in the class, his father was what we call over there a dustbin man. Collect the dustbins, garbage cans. And the kids used to make fun of this lad because his dad collected the dustbins. Yet those same children used to idolize soccer players who earned their... I used to be one, I'm not knocking it, but they earned their living kicking a bag of wind about. And I thought at the time, who would we miss the most if they didn't do their job for a month? We'd miss that guy's father because the place would be full of rubbish and probably by then disease would have started. So our values are of what is success and failure and all that stuff is also manipulated and its agenda set by this pyramid structure. And it's based on non-existent figures moving around a screen. So when that gets out of our psyche and we start to see the big picture, then the circle comes in, and it's a very, very different way of structuring society. But the structure will come out of the consciousness shift, not the other way around, because the world we see today is basically a prison in effect, because we have allowed ourselves to become individual prisons. For me, what we call the world is merely the sum total of what's going on within human beings being expressed outwardly. So if we're in jail individually through fear and through limitation and a sense of limitation, we are actually going to project that out as a physical reflection. So the world is going to reflect, if the overwhelming number of people are in an individual prison of their own making, they are going to project out collectively a global prison. So when we realize the power's not up there, in truth it's actually within, and we set ourselves free, then that inner freedom gets projected out as a physical manifestation, a physical reflection of itself, and the world becomes free. We heal the world by healing ourselves. We free the world by freeing ourselves. It's really dead simple, because the world is what we think and what we imagine it to be, second by second by second. Change our imagination, the world changes. It has no other choice. You know, if I do that with my arms, like, it's not my physical body that said wave your arms about like an idiot. It's my consciousness has told my physical level wave your arms about, so it does it. It does as it's told. The physical level is constantly subordinate to mind, to consciousness, which is why we can think ourselves ill and think ourselves well. And we actually, this is a three-dimensional dream we're looking at here. A three-dimensional expression of human consciousness. When consciousness changes, the three-dimensional dream changes, because our imagination has changed, and the structure comes out of that. When we change, the structure will take care of itself.
That's the second time you've espoused a positive view of what might happen to this world in the next, say, 10 years. And we here in this small town don't get much of an overview of what's going on in the world. So it would be, I think, heartening to us to hear upon which you base your optimism.
Well, I'm a natural optimist, me, because it's much better than being depressed, isn't it, really? Yeah, given me the choice, I think I'll be optimistic. Now, I base my optimism on the fact that, many things, really. First of all, almost all the projections forward, what we know as prophecies for the time of transformation, is for a bumpy transition and then a very different and much better world. That feels right to me. I'm not sitting here thinking, oh, it's all going to be lovely and everything, and it'd be nice, and give me a candle and I'll float off and dust the ceiling because everything's wonderful. Because the transition's going to be bumpy. I mean, we're all seeing signs of that. Any transition is bumpy because if the status quo doesn't break down, then it's going to suppress and stop the new world coming out. You know, if you have a field full of weeds, then it's very difficult for flowers to grow. So the breakdown of the old is essential to allow the new to emerge. So we're going to we're in this transitional period. And I think between now and 2004, 2005, and a bit after that, it's going to be, strap in time. Ever so interesting, though. Strap in time. But, I mean, in the end, what's the worst thing that can happen? We all move to another time-space dimension and continue our evolution. Crikey, I'm terrified. you know. So... so let's all have a bit of fun. Because, you see, if we have fun doing this, and we don't get caught in this, oh, God, it's terrible, oh, my God... If we create a world which reflects our inner imagination of ourselves, if we're caught into, oh my God, it's going to be terrible, oh my God, have you heard the latest, oh my God, then the physical world is actually going to reflect that. If we get into this three-letter word called joy, which we forgot about, and we actually enjoy every moment and live every moment, then that is going to reflect itself into the world. Because one of the things, it's an interesting point, one of the things that diminishes our power to change and affect the only moment we can actually affect at any point, which is now, is because the manipulation of emotions pulls us into the past and the future all the time. You notice that? See, if you're into guilt about something that's happened in the past, and guilt's always about what's happened in the past, that's how it becomes guilt. You say, oh God, I remember it was ever so clear, it was 1954, it were a Tuesday, I shouldn't have never done that, oh I feel so bad, oh my God. That means something that happened in 54 is now destroying the only moment you can actually affect, and that's the now. You feel resentful about somebody, like, you get people say, oh God, I hate her. 1963, I remember it now. God, I hate her. What's she do? Oh, I hate her. Now, the person who's the focus of the resentment, probably on a Caribbean beach, having a great time, you know. Easy on the ice. And there's this person being eaten away by resentment about something that's happened in the past. So resentment and guilt, they pull us into the past. And we live our lives in the past. Now, fear is overwhelmingly a future experience. So that pulls us into the future. Oh, my God, jobs are scarce. Oh, my God, what are the kids? Oh, my God. So we're pulled into the future. And if we fear something happening in the future, we'll pull it in. And we say, I told you so. I told you it would happen. No, you made it happen. That's a bit different. So the fear of the future and these other emotions from the past are constantly destroying the now and diminishing our impact on the now, because our energy and our focus is dissipated into the past and the future. I talked to this Russian guy once who came to see me. I knew he was Russian because he moved around a lot ever so quick, you know. And he said to me, he said, haven't you noticed, he said, no one's ever here. He said, they're always here or here, and we are. It's like even hope is a future experience. You see, if the manipulators, and at the peak of the pyramid, they understand all this. It might be a spiritual desert, but it's intellectual genius we're looking at here at the top of the pyramid. It's the domination of intellect over spirit. And once the intellect is set loose without the balance of the spirit, all hell breaks loose. And... So they understand all this, and they're trying to pull us into the past and the future all the time, so we have less and less impact on the now. And you look at hope is a future experience. It's pulling us into the future.